Hare Krishna.
I have been asked by the organizers to speak on the subject, who is crazy? I guess the reason they specifically asked me to speak on this subject is indicating that perhaps I am crazy. It takes one to know one. I was just remembering in 1970, I came to India searching for spiritual answers to questions in life. I was brought up in a somewhat affluent sector of American society where materially there were so many comforts, so many unlimited ways to enjoy. But I saw all around me so much emptiness and superficiality. Is there something more in life than this? People sitting in front of televisions for hours a day, going to cinemas, just living in a world that is not even a reality. And I didn't see anyone was happy by doing it. Their lives were empty. People working so hard for so much money, and so much money was there. Everything materially that I could want was available to me. But I saw a superficial emptiness within society. There must be a higher meaning to life than this. Who am I? Where am I going? Where am I coming from? If there is a God, who is this God? What is real happiness? So I began to study various religions, philosophies, social groups, and it led me on a journey where I hitchhiked overland from London to the Himalayas, where I began to study. On the way, I was studying various philosophies, sociologies, and religions. After living with sadhus in Himalayas for some time, by the will of God, I came to Vrindavan. And I found the answer that I was looking for in a life of devotion based on such a wonderful philosophy. And it is there that I offered my life to my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I remember while living in Vrindavan, where everyone's a devotee, especially in those days before it became quite commercialized. Everyone was Brijabasis, they had shaved heads and sikas, and they were wearing saris and dhotis. And everyone was 5,000 temples worshipping deities of Krishna and Radharani and chanting Krishna's names. It was the culture, it was normal. And I remember an American professor came to Vrindavan, and he was in Western clothes, and he was behaving in Western ways, and the Brijabasis were laughing at him. What is this strange creature? They were saying to me, "Oh, strange, really, this person's crazy. What, the way he talks, the way he sits, the way he eats, the way he dresses." They thought he was crazy. And because I was living in Vrindavan so long, I also thought he was crazy. But then, by the will of Providence, I returned to the West. And I remember when I came home, my parents thought that I was crazy. And I thought that they were crazy. And I went to New York City. because Prabhupada, my Gurudev, was visiting there. So I went to meet Prabhupada. It was a wonderful experience to see him again. And he was giving lectures morning and evening. And one day they asked me to do Nam Sankirtan in the streets with a group of devotees. So we went to Times Square, which is a very popular part of New York City. And there was about 20 devotees chanting Hare Krishna mantra and very happily singing God's names. And there was a crowd of maybe about 40, 50 people who were just looking at us. And some were really interested, and some were really curious, and some were bewildered. But within the crowd, I happened to see an old friend of mine who I knew in my college days. His name was Ed. And he was just looking at me. He had a three-piece suit and very nicely combed hair, and he was smoking a cigarette. He didn't smoke cigarettes when I used to know him. He was sitting there, he was just looking at me for a long time. Then I saw him, and I went over and I said, I'm so happy to see you. And Ed said to me, are you crazy? You have gone crazy. What are you doing with these crazy people? They have made you crazy. I said, no, no. He said, what are you doing? I said, we're chanting God's names to purify the atmosphere. And he said, you're wasting your time. You're crazy. You're wasting your time. I said, well, what are you doing these days? And I'm not going to go into the details of what he was doing. But when he told me what he was doing, in my heart, I was thinking, I didn't say it because I was trying to be polite. But I was thinking, Ed, you're completely wasting your time. You're wasting your life. You are crazy. And he said, come to my apartment tonight. And then he was telling me what we'll do if I come to his apartment. And I said, I don't know if I'll be able to come. He says, I have to get you away from these people. You've gone crazy. You're wasting your life. What is this chanting guy? I tried to tell him God is not different than his name. It purifies the heart. I was trying to tell him about love of God and you're not this body. And he looked at me like I just came from another planet. He said, you're a fool. You believe in this stuff? You are crazy. Only a crazy man will waste his life like this. And from the core of my heart, I was thinking, Ed, you are a crazy man. Only a crazy man will waste his life like you. So the question is, who is crazy? That is the topic of tonight's lecture. Who is crazy? This is a very interesting question. Because the world is divided into so many factions, and every faction thinks that they're right. And so many factions think that the other factions are crazy. They're wasting their lives. Or they just have it all wrong. Yes? Look at society today. Nationalism. People are saying, I am American. I am Mexican. I am Brazilian. I am Australian, or I am German, or English, or Indian, or Pakistani. Yes, we identify with our nation. That means we're identifying with a particular piece of land. I remember when I was in college, a very charismatic speaker, civil rights leader, he gave a lecture, and he told us that he had spoken to a Native American Indian. Do you know who the Native American Indians are? They're the people who lived in America before 500 years ago. In the entire continent of South America and North America, there was not one single person of white skin. They were the natives. And it was about 500 years ago or so that Christopher Columbus and Cortez and all of these people, they discovered America. Now there's a holiday in America called Columbus Day, the day that Columbus discovered America. And this Indian student, this Native American Indian student, failed his exam because he refused to write that Columbus discovered America. He said, my forefathers have lived here for tens and thousands of years, and this Columbus and his people came and just stole everybody away and persecuted us and put us in reservations and killed most of our people. And you want me to say that Columbus has discovered America? It was not called America. It was called so many names. So what is America? It's a tract of land. And what is land? Land is land. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, according to Gita, Krishna says, I am the proprietor of everything that exists. Land is land. Man makes these designations. Now it's America. India. Just 70 years ago, when the British were occupying India, it was a British colony, yes? And it included Burma and Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka, and West Pakistan and East Pakistan. It wasn't called that then. And now, they're intense rival countries. You have to go through all kinds of immigrations. Just 67 years, 60 or 70 years ago, it was one country. So yes, man is making so many designations by dividing things up, and human beings identify with that. And so many quarrels over who is right and who is crazy, based on the conditioning of our identity. Political parties. Recently in America, there was this election. And the Republicans were just out and out saying that the Democrats were crazy. They were wrong. They were nonsense. They were ignorant. And what do you think the Democrats said about the Republicans? The same thing. You're crazy. You're ruining the country. You're wasting our lives. Political parties at odds with each other. Each thinking, I am right, and you are crazy. And then there's generations. How many of your parents think you're a little crazy? Please raise your hand. Because in generations we like to do new things, and the old people, they just can't identify with this. I often tell, in the 1960s in America, we had a mantra. Anyone over 30 cannot be trusted. That's American life. Yes, Trinakarta Prabhu, you remember that? And now look at us, we're in our 50s. So in generation gaps, the type of music you listen to, the way you want to dress if you had it your way, parents think you're crazy, what are you doing? But when you ask your parents, especially in the West, maybe not so much in India because there's a little more tradition, but my grandparents thought my parents were crazy. And the great-grandparents thought the grandparents were crazy. Because the times are always changing. And then there's religions. Yes? Now for us, to worship Radha Gopinath is the most beautiful, wonderful expression of our heart's love. It's what the great rishis and sages have been doing since time immemorial. It's written in scriptures that were written thousands and thousands of years ago, how to worship the beautiful form of the Lord in the temple. But there are other people of other religions they think, you are crazy. You are worshiping idols. Yes, you have heard this. You're worshiping idols. And so many of the things they do, we may think that they are crazy. Wasting life. And so much conflict between religious people on the basis of different perceptions of reality according to our particular conditioning. Even within a nation. People who just are different are considered crazy. Oftentimes, the greatest people in history were considered crazy while they lived. Yes? Just like today, I came from Belgium on Deakin Airlines. How many airplanes are taking off and landing every day in the world today? And we just consider it just a very, very standard part of life. But just about 100 years ago, there were two people, Orville and Wilbur Wright. They lived around Dayton, Ohio. And they had a vision that man can fly. Everyone thought they were crazy. And they were building all these machines with wings that man would get on. And they had like, at the beginning, it was like a bicycle with wings. They would just be doing the bicycle really fast, and they have the, and they would just somehow, they'd go up and crash. And the people were looking at him like, you're crazy. Man is not supposed to fly. Birds fly. Insects fly. Man walks. Man doesn't fly. They were really considered crazy. They had this vision, they had this dream that we will make man fly like the birds in the sky. Yes, they were labeled crazy by practically the whole society around them. People would joke about them and laugh against them and criticize them. And then one day, you know, they were pedaling and all of a sudden it just took off. And it didn't go very far, but they thought, you see, we're flying. Oh, flying. You could jump off a building and do that. But now they're honored, practically worshipped by all science and technology proponents because they had a vision which was seen as crazy. Now they're respected as some of the greatest persons in the history of technology. And even the automobile. When Henry Ford, he invented the assembly line, but when he and his persons were first trying to create automobiles, people thought they were totally crazy. You're supposed to ride horses, yes? And the first automobiles were really bad. I mean, they made ambassadors look very, very high, like Mercedes or something. They were really, they just... And to start, it wasn't like you just take a key and go... No, you had to get in front and crank it. You had to crank with your hand. You had to crank. And they're just doing that. And people, what are you doing? And everyone was saying, get a horse. That was the mantra, get a horse. Every time they'd see these people trying to develop these cars and get them, they'd go a little and then they'd break down and they'd go a little and they'd break down. They'd have to go out and pump it and turn it and crank it. They were all saying, get a horse. You people are crazy. But just recently, the great-grandson of Henry Ford, who's our godbrother, Ambarish, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, he came to Russia, Moscow. I was there at the time. they didn't know anything about him. He's actually a great saintly person with all good qualities, but they didn't know any of that. Just the fact that he was the great-grandson of Henry Ford, every television station, every radio station, every newspaper, every magazine was waiting at the airport to greet him and do stories about him. It was unbelievable. And then members of parliaments and all these big, big politicians were calling him saying, I want to meet you, I want to meet you. And who was he? The only thing they know about him is he's the great-grandson of Henry Ford. And when Henry Ford was around, people thought he was crazy, and they were saying, get a horse. This automobile stuff is insane. It's crazy. But in his own life, he became such a multimillionaire because he stuck to his convictions. So yes, according to our particular conditioning, according to how we're identifying ourselves, people are going to think we're crazy, and we're going to think other people are crazy. In fact, right now, at this very moment, there's probably some brahmacharis who think I'm crazy. What is this sannyasi doing speaking to hundreds of ladies? Everything is relative in this world. But in order to actually make a proper judgment on who is crazy, there has to be some criteria. Can I tell you a story? When our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, was in New York, he just started the Hare Krishna movement. He brought the original Vedic culture based on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to the Western world. And with so much compassion, he presented things so accurately and so purely that people's hearts started transforming. And one of the first devotees, actually he was the first person in the West to shave his head and put on dhoti. Very radical. The government owed him some money. So he went to a government office to apply for some financial aid. And they looked at him. And they asked, why are you dressed like that? You're wearing a dress. It's a crazy dress. Even women don't wear dresses like this. And your hair, what is this thing in the back? And nobody shaved their head in those days. And he had tilak. They thought, is this man crazy? He said, why are you dressed like this? He said, because I'm a devotee of Krishna. He said, who's Krishna? They said, God. He said, tell us about this Krishna. He said, he has a beautiful blue complexion. He plays flute. And he was really nicely explaining. So they said, all right, you sign your name here. So he signed his name, and they picked up a phone call, the person, and said, yes, this person is here. You should give him what he should get. So he was thinking he was going to get the money. And several people came and tied him up and put him in a straitjacket and brought him to a mental hospital and declared him to be crazy. Now, when Srila Prabhupada heard about this, he wrote an essay. And the name of the essay was, Who is Crazy? Now, before explaining what's in that essay, I'll give another example of this. If you go to a mental hospital, the standard of who is crazy is generally, you think you're someone you're not. Yes? Just like in a mental hospital, there may be many people who think they're Napoleon and they walk around like this. And you're crazy, you're not Napoleon. No, I am Napoleon. And I have my revolution that I am planning. And there's thousands of people in America who are convinced that they are Jesus Christ. And they're put in mental institutions because they're not Jesus Christ. When I was in college, there was a girl, a very nice girl, very sweet girl. She was just about 19 years old. And she started taking LSD. Now, LSD is a particular type of intoxication that some people think it expands your consciousness and gives you inner enlightenment. But Prabhupada used to say you don't get inner enlightenment from a chemical. You have to get inner enlightenment by purifying your own heart. So this girl, she took LSD. And you know what her enlightened state was? Are you interested in this story? She attained a state of enlightenment where she realized that she was a bird. I'm dead serious. And she wouldn't speak anymore. She would just tweet. And she was the life of the party. Because, I mean, she was really interesting because people like people who are different, yes? So she would just be... And she'd just be going like... And everyone was thinking, she's... In hippies' language, they were saying, she is far out. And she was always smiling. She was just so happy to be a bird. And we were... And everyone was happy. She was... But then one day... She was in a third floor of a house, and she was about to jump out the window to fly. Huh? She was like, and she was, and some people, her friends, like grabbed her and said, "What are you doing? What are you?" She couldn't talk anymore. She couldn't think anymore. She was convinced that she was a bird. So they brought her to a mental hospital. And she was not pretending. She actually, that was her identity. And she thought she could fly. And she couldn't talk human language anymore. She only talked bird language. And they kept her in that mental hospital. Why? Because she thought she was someone she was not. She's a human being. But she thinks she's a bird. So they declared her crazy. And as far as I know, she may still think she's a bird. When I went to India, she was still, they had her like in a bird cage just to keep her from jumping out a window and trying to fly and killing herself. It's not really that funny. So this is a definition of craziness, to think you are someone you are not. So if we want to actually analyze the question, who is crazy, we have to analyze, who am I? What is this truth? The Bhagavad Gita, beautiful slope. Yani shasarava bhutanam tasyam jagarti samyame. Yasyam jagrati bhutani sani shapashyato mane. This verse means that what is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. What is night for the enlightened beings is the daytime for the conditioned materialistic people. And what it is night for the conditioned people is daytime for the enlightened ones. On the spiritual path, it is a great waste of time to simply utilize our valuable human energy in pursuit of temporary pleasures. So great personalities, spiritually enlightened people, they are asleep to sensual gratification. And the materialistic persons are very wide awake to that. And similarly, cultivation of inner enlightenment, devotion to God, service to God, the devotees are very much awake to that. But a materialistic person, it's night for them. They're sleeping. So the question is, are we material or are we spiritual? To give up materialistic sinful activities if they feel good is crazy if we're this body. But to engage in those activities is crazy if we're the soul. When Srila Prabhupada was at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, one of the highest ranked colleges in the world, he gave a lecture in an entire auditorium. And he said, you have so many, hundreds and hundreds of courses, thousands of courses you're teaching the students. And that's very good. But is there even one single course that teaches the difference between the body and the soul? Who I am? What is the use if you know so much, but you don't even know who you are? Are we the body, or are we the consciousness within the body? The Gita tells, Dehinosmin yatha dehe komaram yovanachara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatra namuyate. That the embodied soul is passing through various stages of life within this body. From childhood to youth to old age. But who is it that's passing through these changes of the body? Do you remember when you were an embryo in the womb of your mother? At one time, you were there. And what was your body like? It was a little pea size, and then it started just growing little, and soon you have arms and fingers and ears, and your brain and your heart starts growing, and then you have little eyes and your organs, and then you come out a little baby. And as a baby, what was your mind? Just the milk of your mother. That was your mindset, and your body was just like this big. Now, if someone were to show your friend a photograph of yourself when you were an infant, would they recognize you? You have a different body. It's altogether different. And your mind is altogether different too. How many of you are thinking of your mother's milk tonight? So many changes of the subtle and gross body. So yes, the soul, the conscious force that was within the body is witnessing and experiencing the various changes of the body. But that conscious force remains the same. What is the difference between living body and dead body? It is the consciousness. And what is the source of that consciousness? That is the most important question in life. Otherwise, we're in the wrong track. If you have a wrong premise, and then you formulate so many equations based on that wrong premise, will anything come out correct? Who are we? It's a question practically nobody asks anymore. If I ask someone, who are you? They will say a name. But you can change your name. I'm Radhanath Swami. But my name wasn't Radhanath Swami 30 years ago. I had a different name. You can change your name so many times. I'm a man. Am I actually a man? The soul is transmigrating through so many species of life. We have all been insects and trees and fish and women and men and animals and birds. There's 8,400,000 species of life. The Gita explains the soul is transmigrating through them. You may say, I am Indian, but you could change your nationality. In fact, you can say, I'm a man or woman, but with modern scientific medical technology, you can change that. Recently, I'm not going to mention names, but I was at a temple in America, and this nice lady came with sari, a kind of elder lady, and was living in the Brahmacharini ashram. And then I got a call. I found out someone was trying to speak to their father. What is this? You want to speak to your father? And he said, her name is Bhaktin, and I'm not going to say the name. She lives in the Brahmacharini ashram. Your father lives in the Brahmacharini ashram? Brahmacharini means the girls' ashram. Your father lives in the girls' ashram? Said, yes. How's that possible? Said, he changed her sex. I said, well, is he he or she? And he said, I don't, even the children couldn't understand whether he or she. Yes, Trinakarta Prabhu, you know about this. So you could change your sex. You could change your nationality. You could change your hairstyle. You could change your dress. You could change almost anything. And time is changing everything, whether you want to or not. Nobody wants to be old, but we're forced by the power of time to become old. And then we lose so much of our vigor and our beauty and so much. So are we this body? Who are we? The difference between a living body and dead body is consciousness. And according to all the great spiritual persons of all the great philosophies and religions of the world, they declare that that presence of consciousness is the symptom of the soul, the Atma. In the Bible, Jesus said, what is the use if you gain the whole world if you lose your immortal soul? And Krishna tells in Gita that this world is a temporary place. Najayate mriyate bhakadachin nayanbhutva bhavata vanabhuya. The soul is eternal. It does not die when the body dies. According to our activities, according to our desires, according to the consciousness we develop in our life, that will determine the destination of the soul after it leaves this present body. So isn't this an important subject? People are engaging in activities where the laws of karma will torment their soul because of ignorance. I'm this body, and if it feels good, do it. There's laws of the state and there's laws of nature. So yes, if we are this body, then spiritually minded people are crazy for giving up so many of the pleasures. But if we are the soul, then material-minded people are crazy. So who is crazy? Very important question. Are we the body or are we the soul? The body is compared in Gita like a chariot. Or the modern version of a chariot is a car, automobile. Now, there's so many varieties of automobiles. especially nowadays that the market in India has opened. It used to be just Fiat and Ambassador when I first came to India. Now, so many, there's Fords and Chevrolets and Mercedes and Hondas and I don't know all of them. Now, are you identified with the type of automobile you drive in? And the automobile needs petrol, yes? Otherwise, it doesn't run. Now, what happens if you go to the petrol station and tell the attendant, I want 20 rupees of petrol? He says, all right, you take it. And you put it in your mouth and go, huh? Will they think you're crazy? Is that craziness? Putting the petrol pump in your mouth and drinking it? Yes, that's crazy. If you think you're the car, you're crazy. You are the driver of the car. The car has its needs and you have your needs. You need chapati and dal and sabjis and so many things. But if you put chapatis and dal in the petrol tank of the automobile, that would be a disaster. So am I the driver or am I the car? Now this sounds like a very simple, foolish analogy, but it's what life is all about because people don't get it. If I am the consciousness, the soul, what are the needs of the soul? And what are the needs of the car I'm driving in? The car of the human body needs food, and it needs rest, and it needs certain types of enjoyment, yes, and it needs exercise. But what are the needs of the soul? If we don't know, and we think that just putting petrol in the tank is enough for the driver to be satisfied and nourished, we're crazy. But practically the vast proportion of human society is in that craziness. Their complete infatuation is simply to make nice arrangements for their body and mind. And they put practically no energy or effort into the needs of the soul. Gita explains the nature of the soul. Mamayavamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. That the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, or Krishna. As part and parcel, jivera swarupoi krishnera nityadas, we are eternally the servants of God. What is it that the soul longs for and cries for? Everyone wants love. Everyone wants an object they can repose their love in, and everyone wants to be loved. Does everyone agree with this principle? A simple analogy. If you are the proprietor of everything on earth, that means all the buildings, all the real estate, everything on earth is your property, but you're the only human being on earth, will you be happy? You can't have a loving relationship with dead matter. If one little bird comes and lands on your finger, you'll love that bird more than all the property you have, because at least in some way there can be a reciprocation. The heart needs love. And any perverted conception or reflection of love brings us great satisfaction. And the physical, so-called love of the body and the mind infatuates person so much, but because it's temporary and imperfect, it doesn't really satisfy our heart. What is the love that the soul is longing for? It is the love of God and the love for God. That is our original constitutional nature. It is who we are. But since time immemorial, we have forgotten our relationship of pure, ecstatic, dynamic love with God. or with Krishna, the all-attractive one, who has many names. And we're trying to find happiness through the mental and bodily conceptions of life. We can't fill our heart with what we're longing for. So actual spirituality is meant to simply awaken that dormant love of God. Thinking for the soul to think, I am this body and I am all the designations of this body, it's like a dream. Just like sometimes you're dreaming and sometimes you have a nice dream that you're the Queen of England. Yes, nice dream. And they're putting crowns on you and so many people are offering prayers to you and you're sitting on throne. And then you wake up and you're like, what happened? Where's my crown? And sometimes you're dreaming that you're falling off a mountain. Yes, and you're just falling and you're looking down and you know death is coming and you're... And even in your sleep, you're going, ah! Sometimes you're dreaming you're being eaten by a tiger. Ah! And you're going, no! And sometimes it's such a reality we have seen. I remember I lived earlier days, I slept on floor with so many other devotees. And this one devotee was always having these dreams. And all he would just start going, ah! And we just like, it's pitch dark. We couldn't see anything. And we'd have to light a lantern because we had no electricity so much. And you know, what is it? He's going, ah! And we'd wake up, wake up. Ah! And wake up, wake up, wake up. And we'd just wake him up and he'd just, ah! He'd just look around like... And he would have these crazy dreams. He was eating by tigers or some mafia was surrounding him in an alleyway and they were stabbing him with daggers and shooting him with guns. And then he'd just wake up and he'd say, oh, okay, go back to sleep, everything's all right. It's a dream. You're thinking someone you're not. Or you're thinking you're in a situation you're not. So material life is a dream life. The soul is dreaming that I am this body. The body exists. It is not an illusion. When you're in an automobile, it's not that the automobile doesn't exist. The automobile exists. You are just a person inside of it. We're in this body. This body exists. And we must give the body what it needs. We give it nourishment. We give it exercise. We give it proper education. We give the mind and the body what it needs. But it should be used for the purpose of the soul. That is true sanity. The whole world is potentially spiritual. One wonderful definition between material and spiritual is material is to see something or perceive something without understanding its relationship to God. And to see something in its relationship to God is spiritual. So this microphone, is it material or spiritual? If I see it as something to give a political campaign and talk about how great I am and how I will save the world, then I'm seeing it as a material thing. But I'm seeing this microphone, how it can be utilized to actually benefit people in relationship to God, in a spirit of compassion and service, then it is spiritual. These bodies, if we see them as instruments to be used for the highest purpose of life, then we're actually understanding the spiritual value of the body. Otherwise, it's material. So the difference between material and spiritual is simply whether we understand something's relationship to the truth. Everything is spiritual. But that dream state of avidya or ignorance of understanding its relationship to God, its relationship to our soul, that is material consciousness. So Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't tell Arjuna, give up your family, give up your occupation, give up your education, and just meditate. No. The whole Bhagavad Gita is to explain how to spiritualize every aspect of life through proper perception. You're a warrior, fight for Dharma. You're a husband with wife and children, be a father in the light of Dharma. If you're a student, what are you studying? If you're studying to utilize your education in the service of God for the welfare of others, as a way of expressing your thirst for enlightenment, then your education is spiritual. You become spiritually purified and enlightened through study if you have a spiritual aspiration with proper knowledge. The biggest problems of the world is not being caused by uneducated people. It's the most highly educated. They're inventing the huge, gigantic bombs that can destroy most Earth. So much greed, so much passion, so much envy. And their knowledge is power. When power is in the right hands, it has the most beneficial and constructive utilization. When it's in the wrong hands, knowledge and power could have the most destructive force. So this is a very important question that we all have to ask. Who am I? What is my relation to God? What is the purpose of life? What is the greatest thing that I could do within this world? To be a mother is wonderful, but to be a mother and nourish the body, the mind, and the soul of the child is real love based on the foundation of truth. To forget the needs of the soul is an illusion. It is incomplete. Simple example often given. A lady has a bird in a cage, and she just is so proud of that cage. She puts so much energy into decorating the cage and ornamenting the cage and polishing the cage. And a friend comes and she said, I want you to see this cage. And it was the most beautiful bird cage that anyone had ever seen. But the person was horrified. What's wrong? The cage is wonderful. But the bird inside is dead. You forgot the needs of the bird. That's human society. We put so much energy into the cage, which we should maintain nicely, but we also have to recognize that our children, our loved ones, what are we doing for their souls? How are we nourishing our own souls? Who is crazy? When we taste the sweetness of the experience of spiritual life, then yes, engaging in all kinds of wasteful, sinful activities is nothing but craziness. But if you don't have that understanding, then sitting and chanting japa in meditation for 2 hours every day. That's crazy. Huh? If you are the body, if there is no God, that's crazy. Yes, what are you? You could be reading the newspaper in that time. You could be studying and working that much extra hours for that time. But why do we chant the name of God? Why is there prayer and meditation in every spiritual path? To wake up the soul. Consciousness is like pure water. When pure water falls from the cloud onto the ground, it becomes muddy. Yes? The mud is not the water. It's something else mixed with the water. And when there's mud, the water loses its transparency. to filter the water is not to change the water, it's just to bring it back to its original constitution and take out those things that are artificial to it. So spiritual life, especially the chanting of God's name, is meant to filter the consciousness, to separate the lust and anger and envy and pride and greed and anger and illusion, and bring our consciousness to its original natural state, which is transparent, which is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And to experience that love, that ecstasy of our relationship with Krishna, and to share that in everything we do, amongst our loved ones, amongst the world in general. So that is the Bhagavad Gita. And every great spiritual scripture and every great spiritual saint in history, that is their definition of sanity. To seek the treasures of the soul and to utilize everything within this world that we have in a wonderful, wonderful way to celebrate, rejoice, and enlighten with the world with this treasure. So please consider these things very seriously, because many of you are young and you're making decisions in life that will affect your whole life. And especially in youth, that is why education is generally for the young. Because the inquisitive nature of youth to learn is something very wonderful. It's a gift of God. Along with all of the other subjects you're learning, please try to understand who I am. What is the most glorious, wonderful way of life? What is love? What is the soul? And how to harmonize these sacred principles with every aspect of life and make your life beautiful. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
How would the chanting of God's name bring about the inner harmony or the consciousness, awaken the consciousness?
Because God's name is none different than God.
So each religion would have a different name?
Yes. God has many names. Just like the sun in the sky, it is called, some call it Surya, some call soul, some call sun, but it's the same sun. But there are authorized names. It's not that you can say football and that means this. There are authorized names of the sun in each language, yes? So if we're actually, the authorized names of God in every religion are revealed by God. And nam namakari bahuda nija sarava shaktis. The power of God is in within the name of God. And what is the nature of God? Pavitra. God is all pure. We are affected by what we associate with. If you put an iron rod in fire, due to association with fire, the rod becomes red and hot like fire. And if someone says, I don't believe it, it's an iron rod, then touch it and see. And you'll get the same effect as if you put your finger directly in fire. What we associate with, we become. Every mother is always worried about who their children is associating with. Some of you young girls may have had that experience. That your parents very much are worried and disapprove of the friendship you're keeping. Yes? Or they may be very happy with the type of friends you're living with. Because what you associate with, you're going to become like that. It's the law of nature that what we associate with, we become affected. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Ras Vigraha, Krishna and his name are non-different. When we associate with God's name, with our consciousness, we become purified. When we associate with God's name, our natural love of God awakens. Lord Chaitanya said, Cheto Dharapanam Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam, that the mind is like a mirror. The purpose of a mirror is to reflect yourself. Yes? You're supposed to see yourself in the mirror. But what if that mirror has been abused and misused and neglected for centuries? Then there will be very thick, hard layers of dirt and dust and debris. And what do you see when you look in the mirror? You just see all that dirt and dust and debris. Our minds have been collecting so much debris, so much pollutants, so much misconceptions. And now the soul is looking at life through the mind when it's in this body. It's looking through the mind, and what does it see? It sees all of its desires and all of its cravings and all of its envies and all of its conceptions, yes? We only see the dirt. The chanting of God's name, because it is a pure spiritual vibration, it is mantra. Man means mind and tra means to free, to purify, to deliver. Mantra means to clean the mind, make it as it is. As we chant God's name, the mirror of the mind becomes cleaner and cleaner and cleaner and cleaner until we can actually see ourself. And when we see ourself, what do we see? Satchidananda, that we are eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. We see in ourself, we see our relationship with Krishna based on pure, unalloyed love, unconditional love. When we see our life through a pure mind, we see the world as a way of expressing our love for God through everything we do, everything we speak, and everything we think, to be an instrument of God's compassion. That is the nature of every soul, to be an instrument of God's compassion within this world. What's keeping us from that? The dirt in our mind. Instead of living motivated out of compassion and love, we're motivated by lust and anger and pride and greed and so many other things. And so many bodily designations. I'm man, I'm woman, I'm Eastern, I'm Indian, or I'm American, I'm rich or I'm poor, I'm Brahmin or I'm Shudra. All of these designations, they become a reality. But when the mind is clear, we learn to utilize all of these wonderful gifts of God in a spirit of love and compassion within the world. That is the effect of chanting God's name, and that's how it works. It simply cleans our mind and awakens our original natural consciousness. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you that what's the solution when our soul is negatively affected and we are hopeless about a situation and it's like we are going to not get success in the future about some regarding some matter or regarding some danger. So what is the solution for that, being negatively affected, when your soul is negatively affected? It affects your body.
The best solution is to associate with people, activities that will positively affect our consciousness. We have free will. That is the very basis of our existence, is our free will. We have the power to choose. Yes? And we have the power to choose what we're going to do with our life, who we're going to associate with. Yes? People want to take you to the permit room. Yes? That's what you call in India, permit room? Or to the disco. So they may be saying, come, come, what is your name?
My name?
Yes.
My name is Sheetal. I haven't been to a disco.
Ah, very good.
But I love dancing.
Huh?
I do dance. It's my hobby.
Well, dance is good, but who do you dance for? That is most important.
Still.
Huh?
Indian classical.
Indian classical dance is all for the purpose of dancing for the pleasure of God. That's why it was invented, to dance for the pleasure of God and to enlighten people with God through your dancing. That's why it was invented. Now, what people do with it today, they may do it for money and so many other things, which is subordinate. But actually, the essence of Indian class, do you pray to Saraswati before you begin?
Not that type. I do not pray. It's not exactly that way, but little bit like that. I've not learned it. It's natural.
But that's the way it used to be, where you make your dance an offering to God. And then dance is something very enlightening and inspiring to you and to everyone. So back to the disco. Someone's saying, come, come, come. And you have your choice. If they're your friends and they're going to take you, then that's where you're going to probably go. But you can also make friends with people who say, come to the temple and dance for Krishna. And you can go there also. So we have our choices. So the way to overcome negativity is to replace it with positivity.
One more question.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Thanks.
Negativity is there everywhere, but positivity is also there everywhere. Just like right now in this room, do you know how many vibrations and energies are coming? It's like if you bring a television in this room. Now there are satellites, televisions. I don't know how many stations do you have in India? Huh? 90 or 100. Very advanced. In the West, I've seen over 100 stations. And all you have to do, you don't even have to get up and turn. All you have to do is just press a button, and you can get any station you want. Cricket game. Then just, and it's the news. And some love romantic scene, and then and it's a murder scene, and there's like horrible monster, a dinosaur eating New York, you know. So you can just push. That means all the vibrations are there all the time. It's a question of what you're tuning into. If you tune into the positive, you're going to attract all the positive energy. If you turn into the negative, you're going to attract all the negative energy. And that's our free will. That's our choice. If we associate with positive, spiritually minded people, if we chant God's names, if we pray to God, if we live a moral life, then we're actually accessing positive spiritual energies. And that's the best way to overcome negativity, is to replace it with positivity, which begins with what we associate with and who we associate with. Yes, next question.
I also wanted to ask you that our natal chart or our birth chart, according to palmistry, what our lines signify, the person we are, the characteristics we have. And if somebody tells us you're a bad person, and we might not feel it, we are a bad person, but can we become good? Or is it that your birth chart signifies these following characteristics, so you are that kind of a person? Do we have free will in that?
Yes, you have so much free will.
Can we change ourselves?
Yes. Even today you can change yourself. That is our free will. All that our palms and our astrologers can tell us is, if they actually know the science properly, which is quite rare these days, is what our particular karmic situation is. But what is our karma? Our karma is based on decisions we have made in the past. But what is our future? Our future is the decisions we make today. How we react to the karma of the past will be our future. We create our own destiny. Srila Prabhupada, he gave a very famous example of what to do if you have bad lines in your hands. He said, chant the holy names and clap. And he said, all the lines will change. Maybe not visibly, but in reality. Yes? Huh? Yes, if you just make the right choices, you can change your destiny. We're not so concerned with what our past karmas are. Palmistry, astrology, and all these things, they could give some indications of what you've done in the past and where you're going. But you have a choice of where you're going to go. Yes? And that's why association is so important, because it helps us to make the right choices.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Please, could you tell me the qualities of a mature person?
The qualities of a mature person. Qualities of a mature person is a person who does not act instinctively on the basis of reacting to circumstances, but a person who actually understands through knowledge and through wisdom of what is actually to be done and what is not to be done. Yes? It is said that youth is wasted on the young. You have heard that before? Have you heard that? Youth is wasted on the young. Because when you're youthful, you have so much energy and so much dynamics, but usually young people are, they're quite crazy. Now, when I was young, I thought old people were crazy, but now that I'm old, I see that young people are actually crazy. Because so many things that they do, they regret when they get older. Because they're just influenced by just the instinctive, you know, just do it now. Whatever feels good, whatever everybody else is doing, whatever socially is cool. Yes, socially very cool to do this. That's immature. Actual maturity is to have the wisdom and the experience to understand what I'm doing, how will it affect my future? How will it affect other people's future? And to be sober and contemplative, to actually, you know, be thoughtful and wise about really what is beneficial for me now and the future and others. That is maturity. And you don't have to grow old to be mature. But oftentimes, it helps. Because you pass through many experiences in life. The best way to be mature when you're young is to actually take guidance from mature people who have wisdom. In every traditional society on the face of the earth, the elder people were considered wise, and the young people would always take guidance and advice from them. Otherwise, they'll just be walking into holes and not even know that they're holes unless somebody says, be careful. But in today's world, young people are very reckless, and they're not taking such guidance and offering proper respect to parents, to elders who actually know. Yes? Does that answer your question?
One more question. What is the difference between love and attachment?
Love and attachment?
Yeah.
Love means attachment. If you're love, then you're attached. But the difference between kama and prema, or material attachment, lust, and spiritual attachment, prema or love, there is a difference. When our attachment is to the temporary pleasures of the mind and senses, that is material kama. When our attachment is to the all-beautiful, all-loving Lord of our life, God or Krishna, that is love. What happens when we love Krishna, who is the essence of everything and everyone, who is the source of all that exists? Krishna is all attractive. He is Bhagavan. Bhagavan means he possesses all opulences. There are six primary opulences. Is someone attractive when they're beautiful? What do you say? Beauty is an attraction. And then some people are attracted to someone who has great wealth. Krishna is the source of all beauty. Whatever beauty we see in anything or anyone in this world, it is just a tiny little fragmental spark of a reflection of God's beauty. So Krishna is all beautiful. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Krishna is the proprietor of everything that exists. A wealthy person in this world is attracted. He may have, you know, maybe a few billion dollars. Yes? But what is a few billion dollars? And how long could he keep it? Krishna is the proprietor of everything forever. And strength. Just like in India, you have your cricket. Yes, they are showing their strength, their speed, and their efficacy in hitting balls and catching balls and everything like that. And there's boxers and wrestlers and baseball and football. And people are mad after sports. Yes? Trinakarta Prabhu is from Chicago. So he knows what the Chicago Bears. Yes, they're just like bears. They're just jumping and beating each other. And everybody, they're very popular. Hitting baseball, basketball, jumping high and throwing balls and hoops. These people are paid tens and millions of dollars a year. They're most popular people in society. And in India, cricket. I don't even understand all this cricket. When I first came to India and someone said, "I play cricket," I said, "You play with insects?" So what did they looked at me like I was really offending them. I play cricket. I said, "Crickets are little insects. At night they go." You've heard crickets at night? Because in America, no one has ever heard of cricket. Nobody plays it, except maybe some Indians. Other than that, it's non-existing. But when you come, cricket star, very, very attractive, yes? If a cricket star uses a particular toothpaste, practically the whole India will use that toothpaste. Yes, if a cricket star reads a particular magazine, everyone will read the magazine. So very attractive, that's strength. But whether you're baseball, basketball, cricket, football, how long do you keep that strength? By the time you're in your mid-30s or early 40s, you're finished. Yes? But Krishna, when he was 7 years old, he lifted Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand for 7 days and seven nights. Yes? When he was only about 3 months old, he opened his mouth. He was about 2 years old. He opened his mouth and his mother saw the entire universal creation within his mouth. Now that's strength. The laws of gravity are God's energy. That means by Krishna's strength, by his mere thoughts, he creates an energy of gravity that is supporting every planet in the solar system and all the universes in the cosmic manifestation. Now that is strength. Yes? And fame. Fame is an opulence. Even if a person's crazy, if he's famous, people want to meet him. Yes? Even if you're a gangster, a mafia person, if you're famous enough, people, oh, because your fame. In Chicago, Al Capone, yes, Alphonse Capone. He was a killer. He was a murderer. But to this day, people travel all around the world to come to Chicago to go to museums about Al Capone. Because he was famous. But who's more famous than God? In the Quran, in the Holy Bible, in the Vedic scriptures. Everyone's talking about God. How many mosques, how many churches, how many temples are in the world? Who is more famous than God? Even the atheists are always talking about how there is no God. So God has the supreme opulence. Wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge. Krishna says in Gita that Vedaham samatitani varatamanani chajana babashani chabutani mamtu vedana kashtana. I know everything that's happened in the past, I know everything that's happening in the present, and I know all things that are yet to come, and I know all living beings perfectly, intricately. He knows every thought of every living being within all of existence. Now, who has that type of knowledge? And renunciation. Although the Lord has all opulences in full, still, such loving, caring, humble, that he comes under the control of his devotees' love. So that is attraction. When we realize God, when we repose our loving propensity in God, we experience the highest happiness, the highest bliss. Yes? And then that love is transformed into compassion, love and compassion toward every living entity, without discrimination. Once you understand something about God, that experience, you see the pure soul, a part of God in everyone's heart. Even if a person is cruel, you'll see that the essence of that person is perfect. The essence, the soul, is my brother and sister. They may be in a disease condition, they may be a healthy condition, but we can only love. To love God means to unconditionally love every living entity, spontaneously. That is love. And that is complete attachment. But spiritual attachment. But to the personal, egoistic, selfish desires of the mind and senses, that can never fulfill our desires. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Thank you. There is one question here. Why do we chant on beads? We have already explained to some extent the effect of chanting God's name. And great saintly persons since time immemorial have chanted using beads. We could chant anytime, anywhere. There are no hard and fast rules. Wherever, riding on a train or laying in bed, we can always chant God's name. And if we chant sincerely with attention, it will have great effect of purifying our heart. But to regularly chant help our concentration and also regularize our chanting. Beads are very, very helpful. They very much, when it's chanted properly, increase our concentration and also give us regularity. It's like when you take medicine, you're told, take 3 tablets twice a day. Yes? So there's no maximum in chanting God's name, but we want to chant a minimum. At least for our devotees, we try to chant before initiation at least 16 rounds. We can begin with at least 1 round. That means we know we're really just putting that time aside exclusively and explicitly to absorb ourselves in the purifying effects of the holy name. So chanting on beads has been done by the Lord himself. and by so many of the great saints of the past, and very, very effective to do so. This is from Lata. Who is Lata? Haribol. If we are finally the soul, and all of us are spiritually bound within, then why do we have a body? Also, as you said, that we are supposed to play our roles in society as a daughter, mother, etc., how is it possible to do so without identifying with our body? This is very thoughtful. Thank you, Lata. We are within this body according to our previous activities and desires. We have a particular body. Why is one person born in a particular body, in a particular family, in a particular species, in a particular situation, and another some another? It is because of that soul's previous activities and desires in past lives that we're given a particular body. So that's why we have the body that we have now. But human body is so precious, it is so rare. Because in the human body, we could realize God. We could fulfill the ultimate aspirations. The animal species are simply living according to their instincts of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They have no power to question, who am I? What is real happiness? So this human life is very, very special and very rare. And we may identify with this body in our roles as a mother or a daughter or a friend. But our identities with this body should be in harmony with our spiritual understandings. It's not, we understand that the soul is not the daughter of this mother and father. Yes? Because we've had so many millions of mothers and fathers, the soul. But in the human form of life, this particular mother and father have given me this particular body, so we have certain responsibilities, and we have an identity with that. Our body has an identity. A devotee does not discard the relationships of the body. A devotee tries to Krishnize the relationship with the body. Does that make sense? So we honor our mother, but at the same time, we do it as Krishna or as God wants us to do it. We can be a friend. We can be a relative. Just like our Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. Before taking sannyas, he had children. He had wife. Or let's use the example also of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was a Paramhamsa, a purely realized soul. He had 10 children and a wife. And he worked as a magistrate for the British government. Yes? But he was doing everything and seeing everything in full knowledge of the self. These are my children in the sense that God has put these children in my responsibility, under my care. They're God's children, but they're under my care. And he raised all of his children to be wonderful, happy, pure devotees of God. Yes? And he worked in the government and he understood his relationship with his superiors and his relationship with his inferiors. Because when in this world, we have to deal with the etiquettes of the world. But he had a purpose. And what was the purpose? To express the great love of his soul in everything he did. And to serve the needs of the soul through all relationships and all bodily connections and identifications. So yes, we should honor our mother, honor our parents. We should be respectful to all friends, all relatives. But we should not forget that ultimately I am a spirit soul and they are spirit souls. And what is the greatest service that I could do in these relationships? And that is why we chant Hare Krishna mantra. To actually have a consciousness in which we can see the spiritual essence and see the spiritual opportunities in every situation and every relationship that we have. Does that answer your question? When we are dressed as a devotee, the people passing by passes some comment on us. So how should we react to that time? We should offer all respect. I have been in places. One time I was sitting on a campus, Ohio State University in America, and I was chanting dressed like this, and some people were, they really thought I was strange. They were throwing eggs on me. Huh? And somebody else threw tomatoes on me. And somebody else sprayed a fire extinguisher on me. All at the same time. And I was just going like this, you know. What can you do? And then many of those people came and said, you know, you're not angry with us? I said, no, you know, it's all right. I'm just come to serve you. And then they sat down and listened to Bhagavad Gita and bought Bhagavad Gitas and started chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Ho. So, people may say a comment, but we should act with respect and compassion to all living beings. That is proper. What is your opinion, Trinakarta? Huh? There's not only one way to act. How to discard the materialistic thoughts while chanting the holy name? Krishna says in Gita, yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthitam, that wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, we just keep bringing it back to the self. So the nature of a little baby child is it always wants to do dangerous things. One parent told me that they put a whole room full of toys and they took all dangerous things out and they left the child alone. And the child found in a drawer a razor blade and was playing with that. Yes? So, the nature of the mind is like a baby. It just wants to do all restless things. But the duty of the mother is to keep bringing the child back to a safe place. So the intelligence is like the mother and the mind is like a child. With our intelligence, when our mind wanders to various thoughts and various ambitions, the intelligence is to bring it back. So as we're chanting, if the mind wanders, we just, with our intelligence, focus the mind once again on the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. We'll do one more question, then we will end. This lady is saying she is not chanting well. How to chant well? The same answer as previous question. If we chant regularly and we sincerely keep bringing our mind back to the purifying sound of the holy name, we become purified. And Lord Chaitanya taught, the disposition of mind which makes our chanting most effective is to be humble like a blade of grass,
tolerant like a tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect no respect for oneself. Trinadapi sunichena tador iva sehishnana. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If we cultivate this disposition in our life and try to be attentive, then the grace of God will flow through the holy name and awaken the experience that everyone is longing for and searching for eternally. I wish to thank you all very, very much. Actually, in relation to who is crazy, everyone is crazy. It's just a matter of what you're crazy for. Yes? Our Guru Maharaj quoted a historical instance. In Calcutta, there was a murder trial. Yes? And the lawyers or the attorneys for the defendant claimed that he wasn't responsible for murdering this person because he was insane. Yes? If they find that you're actually psychologically insane, then even the court system will not hold you so strict for your crimes. So he claimed, and his lawyer claimed, that he was not in proper sanity. Therefore, he should not be held fully responsible for the crime. So they sent him to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist was going to give his verdict to the judge of whether he's crazy, insane, or not. And this was a very, very senior psychiatrist who had been practicing for many, many decades. And he came to the court and told the judge that I've never met a patient that wasn't insane to some extent. Everyone's crazy. So if you want to know, if you want me to tell you whether this man is insane, like everyone else in the world, everyone has their insanities. Arrivo. Now that's clinical psychiatrist. So who's crazy? Everyone's crazy. Some are crazy for material ego. Some are crazy for money. Some are crazy for sex. Some are crazy for fame. Yes? Some are crazy for Krishna. So yes, when devotees dance and sing, they look crazy. But they're crazy for Krishna. And that's the perfection of life, to be crazy for the right thing. But to not be crazy, impossible. In someone's eyes, you will always be crazy. So let us be crazy for Krishna. Let us be crazy to be compassionate instruments of God to do wonderful things for this world. That is the perfection of life. Thank you very, very much. It has been a great honor and pleasure to serve you this evening. Hare Krishna.